I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we'll start the show with an exclusive report on a major Washington political candidate who's lying about her job history.
Hi, I am Manka Dhingra.
Plus, the mayor of Newcastle is now facing media criticism on two fronts, both for his comments about Pride Month and apparently his comments about reparations.
You're going to hold on to something forever?
Plus, a new Florida law aims to help low-income families reach financial freedom. We'll discuss that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, our final live show of the week, although we have a wonderful episode of Sundays of Subscribers coming up that we'll talk about momentarily. Never ceases to amaze me the things that political candidates will lie about. It's like, do you not think that people are going to find out about these things? It's really stunning to me. And then also there's this added layer of, do people care? Have we just let standards slip so much for who runs for public office that we're like, meh. You know, that's not the worst lie that's ever been told. So this is something we've been looking into for a couple months. I'll admit it kind of got pushed to the back burner, which will become relevant in a moment. But we were watching the debate yesterday, or was it Monday, Tuesday? What, Nicole, what day is it? Is it Thursday? We were watching the debate this week for
yesterday.
For Attorney General of Washington State. And the candidates were being introduced, And when State Senator Manka Dhingra, who's a pretty far left Democrat who's running for AG, was introduced, my ears perked up a little bit. Here is that moment.
Manka Dhingra is here, a senior deputy prosecuting attorney in King County and a deputy majority leader in the Washington Senate.
Yeah, interesting. Can you play it one more time for me, Nicole? One more time.
Manka Dhingra is here, a senior deputy prosecuting attorney in King County and a deputy majority leader in the Washington Senate.
Senior deputy prosecuting attorney for King County. And that's something that Manka Dhingra has talked about quite a bit, you know, being a prosecutor and all of that. So that seems like a perfectly appropriate way to introduce her, right? I mean, her experience as a prosecuting attorney makes a lot of sense. She's running to become the attorney general, the state's chief law enforcer. And it wasn't just her being introduced that way at the debate this week. Also in the video voter guides that were put out last week by the state of Washington, she introduced herself in that way. Here it is.
Hi, I am Manka Dhingra, deputy majority leader of the Washington State Senate, senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County, and I'm running to be your next attorney general.
Gotcha. Okay, just so I heard it correctly, Nicole, can you play that one more time for me?
Hi, I am Manka Dhingra, Deputy Majority Leader of the Washington State Senate, Senior Deputy Prosecuting Attorney with King County, and I'm running to be your next Attorney General.
Gotcha. Now, that would be great. Obviously, that's great experience. She's a current Senior Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, introduced that way at the debate, introduced herself that way on the video voter guide, except Manka Dhingra is not a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County. She has not been full-time as a career a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County for the last 7 years. She did a couple short stints in 2019, a couple months in 2021, but since 2021, she hasn't been employed by King County at all in the position of a prosecutor. And again, she hasn't This hasn't been her full-time career since 2017. So this isn't coming from me or from some anonymous tipster. We confirmed this with the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. We sent them an email asking if they could provide us with her work history, and this is what they told us. They said she was employed as a criminal deputy prosecuting attorney from the year 2000 to the year 2017. She then left to run for state senate. She was rehired for just a couple months from June 2019 to November 2019, and then she was rehired on a part-time basis again for just a couple months from July 2021 to October 2021. So again, she hasn't been a full-time career senior deputy prosecuting attorney for 7 years. So why is she in the video voter guide informing voters about who she is and what she does and what her qualifications are? Why is she lying about something that's so easily disprovable? And I'll say, so I got, you know, a call about this from somebody with the prosecutor's office who obviously, you know, didn't want to go on the record, who said, hey, you should look into this. Manka Dhingra is out there telling everybody she's a senior deputy prosecutor. She hasn't worked here for years. And I thought, no way. Why would she lie about something so dumb? that's so easily disprovable. And then all it took was one email from the King County Prosecutor's Office for Casey McNerthy and their public records team to say, nope, she's not employed with us anymore. Yet today, at least as of 10 minutes ago, on every single one of Monica Dingra's social media pages, both her official government social media pages and her election pages, Facebook, Twitter, both Twitter accounts, LinkedIn, it says that she is a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. Lie, 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 lie. And what would the harm be? This is what I don't get. What would the harm be of just saying former? What would the harm be in just saying former? I'll tell you what the harm is in a moment, but I'll also say this extends beyond her social media pages on both of her About Me sections. Again, on her official Washington State Senate bio and on her campaign site right now for Elect Monica Dingra, both of them also say she is a current senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County, which is just not true. It's interesting because on the Monica Dingra for Attorney General page, it says she has been a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County since January of 2000 and is the former chair of the Therapeutic Alternative Unit. Okay, you put former in there for that job. Why would you not put former in there for the prosecuting attorney job? And it is incredibly troublesome that on multiple official government pages, including, like I said, her Twitter account and here on the Washington State Senate Democrats page, that she's lying about what her current job is. One interesting little, this gets into a bit in the weeds, but I want you to know how much we looked into this. So this tip first came to us in February, like early February. And I'll admit I didn't jump on it at the time, except to reach out to the prosecuting attorney's office. And we just said, hey, can you confirm what her work history is for us? A couple days we went through internet archives to see, because look, all of us have had outdated bios. I'm sure you could find an outdated bio for me somewhere floating around on the internet. Like, I don't think that's the crime of the century if you just haven't updated your bio in some time. Obviously, it's different in her case because she was just introduced as a senior deputy prosecuting attorney at the debate. And she also, in her own words, from her own mouth, said she was a senior deputy prosecuting attorney in the video voter guide, which is lying to voters, which is just lying to voters. But there was this interesting, you know, so we went back in internet archives and pulled up, you know, over the years, because she's had since 2021 to fix this, right? So she's had 3 years to fix it, which I think is more than enough time to update your bio. And what we found in internet archives is that her bio on her state Senate page, for instance, it has been updated several times in different ways throughout the last 3 years. So there were opportunities where someone went in there and updated her bio where they could have updated her job history as well. But a couple days, according to internet archives, after we first inquired with the prosecutor's office about this, just like 2 days later, someone went into her state Senate bio and made a slight adjustment. It went from saying Dingra continues to serve as a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County to Dingra has been a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County since 2000. Now, both of those are false. Has been is still suggests that she continues to be. But you notice that slight change 2 days after we first inquired about it. Isn't that weird to you? If that's why, look, could be a coincidence. I tend to doubt it. But if that's why you changed it, why wouldn't you change it to be actually accurate and say she was a senior deputy prosecuting attorney? Now, here's why this bothers me beyond it's the dumbest lie. It's so easy to disprove. And maybe this is the belief that the media won't do its due diligence. You know, I've seen a couple media reports where she's referred to as a current senior deputy prosecutor attorney, although I also saw one where she was described as a former. So maybe when media outlets do their job and ask her specifically, you know, she tells them that she's not anymore. But this is what bothers me about this. Monica Dingra has used her career as a prosecutor as some sort of get out of jail free card for her soft on crime policies. Namely, chiefly, over the last 3 years during debates about the police pursuit law. In 2021, Senator Monica Dingra was a champion of taking away the ability of police officers to pursue violent criminals, dangerous criminals. That law passed, and in the 3 years since then, there have been numerous debates in the Senate, in the media, about fixing that law. It has now been fixed, thankfully, no thanks to Senator Monica Dingra. But over those 3 years, she always talked about, oh, her experience as a prosecutor, and look, she was a prosecutor, but she, again, has not done that full-time since 2017. Well, a lot has happened on the criminal justice front since 2017. The crime crisis wasn't out of control in 2017. She talks a lot about her work in behavioral health in the criminal justice system. We have an out-of-control mental health crisis and drug crisis that didn't exist in this capacity in 2017. So her experience is valid, but it only goes so far. In the last 7 years, so much has changed within that system. Yet she continues to pretend to everyone that she's currently in the trenches, in courtrooms, day in and day out, dealing with criminals, and still believes that we shouldn't let police pursue violent criminals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's beyond just dishonest. It's a lie. And I really believe that it's a lie she continues to tell because, one, she knows that that's a great experience for becoming an attorney general. So she wants voters to believe that she's still working as a prosecutor, day in and day out, and dealing with the crime crisis. That's what, in my opinion, she wants people to believe. So there's that part of it, but she also wants to cling to that job title as a way to excuse some of the horrible public safety bills that she has pushed, or public safety bills, actual public safety bills, that she has quashed as the chair of the Senate Law and Justice Committee. It's funny because I made a couple phone calls and I was sending texts to people who work with Monica Dhingra in the state Senate and also some folks in political circles. And I just wanted to, I was kind of like floating a balloon, like, hey, what's Monica Dhingra's job? Oh, she works in the prosecutor's office. People just believe that because that's what she says. She hasn't, again, full time. This is the thing that bothers me about it. It was the same with the Semi Bird thing, where it's like, dude, he did a lot for our country. Why lie about things you did when you already did so much? She was a full-time prosecutor for 17 years. That's awesome. That's enough. I'm not making a commentary on whether she was a good prosecutor or not. I don't know in those early days, but you did it for 17 years. Why do you have to inflate and manufacture your current job history? So Nicole has sent an email to the Dhingra campaign last night. We followed up again this morning. And one of the questions that I asked is, what is her job right now? Because being a state senator is a part-time job. That's a three-month maybe job out of the year. So what's her job right now? Because why wouldn't she talk about what she's doing right now as opposed to what her full-time job was back in 2017? So state senator Monica Dhingra running to be the state's chief law enforcer is perfectly fine, as evidenced by the debate this week. I might as well play the clip again. Perfectly fine with people believing that she is currently a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County.
Monica Dhingra is here, a senior deputy prosecuting attorney in King County and a deputy majority leader in the Washington Senate.
Yeah, see how she nods her head? Yep, that's me. Yes, that is like me running for chief dog catcher and saying, I am currently a reporter with Fox 13. Like, I haven't been that for 3 years. I would never introduce myself in that way. It makes no sense. I also, by the way, really quickly, and I should see if they've responded in the space that I gave them to respond. The King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, which has been great during all of this, because we checked again with them this week to make sure, hey, you didn't rehire her, right? Because she just put out in her video voter guide that she's a senior deputy prosecuting attorney. They said, no, she still doesn't work for us. So one of the things I asked them this morning, and I'm waiting on comment, is given that you now know she's misrepresenting herself to voters as an employee of your office, do you intend to ask her to stop? I hope the answer is yes, because she's misrepresenting herself as a current King County prosecutor when she isn't. She was. She should just say that. But for some reason, she won't. I don't know about you, but someone who so carelessly lies to the people she wants to serve doesn't belong anywhere near elected office, specifically the office of the attorney general. We already have a liar in the office of attorney general. We don't need another one. All right. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Newcastle. We discussed it on the show yesterday. So the city got, small Washington city got national attention because their city council voted 4-3 that they were not going to raise the pride flag over City Hall. That happened at the beginning of June. The mayor at the time said, look, we already have a flag that represents everyone. Do you have the previous one? Here's what he said at the time that got so much attention.
So if we start raising flags, we got to raise everybody. How, we want a Hamas flag flying over, you know, the city of Newcastle, or MAGA flag? How about a Trump flag or a, you know, an Antifa flag? We're not going there, folks. Not while I'm the mayor. I'm sorry. So this is already an inclusive city with an inclusive flag that flies 24/7 over our city. We include everybody. We're not going to exclude somebody, and we're not going to say, well, this group is better than that group, so they get a flag or they get a day. Everybody is equally represented by the American flag every single day.
Yeah, and so that's Mayor Robert Clark. So he said that, and then, the mob came out of the woodwork. And the mob of people that's like, love everyone, inclusive, inclusion, like, good vibes and love and feelings, of course, got vitriolic. We saw some of that. There was a meeting this week where there was going to be another vote because of how many people were emailing and saying, no, we want you to raise the pride flag. They had some sort of impromptu kind of mini demonstration outside where people were blocking a pastor from moving around. Some guy was cursing out Jonathan Cho. So yeah, all full of love and inclusion or whatever it is. So anyway, one of the council members who happens to be the deputy mayor flipped her vote this week. So they have now raised the pride flag over Newcastle City Hall. Fine. Weird. I already said my piece about that yesterday. But what we hadn't talked about yesterday is now a new angle of attack on Mayor Robert Clark that the media has taken up. In fact, there was an article in the Seattle Times about it. I'll talk about it in a moment. But so he gave a longer speech as part of this vote this week to reverse course. It was like 15 minutes. And I loved a lot of it. I was like, wow, he is spitting absolute truths and bringing all the receipts. And one of the points he was making is he was talking about some of the people in the room who were there in favor of raising the pride flag, including a citizen who runs a Newcastle community Facebook page. And he's calling people out by name. He's saying, you're here to talk about, you know, love and acceptance, yet here's what you're posting on social media. Like straight hatred toward white people, toward the mayor, absolute vitriol. So this mayor is name by name, naming and shaming citizens and even his fellow council members for saying hateful things about, who are sitting right next to him while he's calling him out, who are saying hateful things about him on social media. So here's a clip.
These council members, they don't know what's in my heart. They don't know what we're talking about. They don't have any clue. It's all made up stuff. Right? To sow dissension. There is dissension in our community, folks, and I'm sorry to be angry and brusque, right? But the true division is the people who lecture you about being kind and then do the exact opposite.
100%. And we say that all the time. It's like you have these people who preach inclusivity, yet not if you disagree with me politically. You know, not if you're not hook, line, and sinker for everything I believe, then I'll be hateful and vitriolic to you. And we see that on the right, too. I mean, I just said yesterday the threats I'm getting from semi-bird supporters that they're going to turn me into cat food. It's like, okay, calm down, you know, calm down. So this tirade was, I'll call it a tirade, because he was clearly very frustrated, right? But he ended up bringing up stuff outside the realm of Pride Month. He also brought up the issue of reparations. And this meeting was happening on the eve of Juneteenth. So, oh my gosh, you can't do that. So I know there was a radio host this morning who was ranting about how basically this mayor is racist because he talked about reparations. And I'm thinking, gosh, what did he say, right? Because the Seattle Times also did an article on eve of Juneteenth, Newcastle mayor disparaged reparations and pride. Interesting. So the Seattle Times is saying he disparaged reparations and pride. That was interesting to me because I didn't ever hear the mayor disparage pride. He just basically said we already have an inclusive symbol in the pride flag, right? And I thought he disparaged reparations. What does that mean? So here is the clip from his speech where he talks about reparations.
You know, I'm a veteran. There's a lot of veterans. The American flag is very special to me, right? It was paid for by the blood of people, men and women, over the centuries that gave us the rights we have now. I recognize that no person, group, or country is without sin or flaw. These flaws or sins have historically led to bad outcomes, marginalizations, and so on. But you've got to ask yourself, at what point do you just continue to hold on to these, or do you let go and move forward? You're going to hold on to something forever? You're supposed to take your history and learn from it and correct the grievances and the marginalizations or anything that you felt was an issue. 160 years ago, the Civil War ended and California just established a committee to study reparations. California was a free state with no slaves, and nobody's a slave there today, but they can't let go. And it causes division and hate and creates victim groups because people are focused on what divides us and what instead of what unites us. How long do we hold on to grievances? A couple years, a couple decades, a couple centuries? You want to pass down to your great-great-grandkids that, hey, one day, you know, I was called a bad name, you know, 200 years ago, so don't forget, man, be a victim, right? That's where we're at, right? I reject that totally. I totally reject that. Now, we know what's going to happen when we have this vote, right? It's going to reverse what's going to happen, what happened 2 weeks ago, okay? But that's democracy.
I love every second of that. That's not disparaging. How is that disparaging reparations? Like the Times says, first of all, we should disparage reparations. Reparations, unless they are targeted specifically to people who actually had stuff taken from them by the government or were prevented from home ownership, who can prove that case, reparations make no sense. Some of the laws that we've seen across the country. So why would it matter if he disparages reparations? He's not disparaging Black people, and he clearly wasn't disparaging what Black people went through in this country. He talked about the ills of our society, you know, more than 100 years ago. So he's acknowledging all of that. And, you know, also to the Seattle Times for that headline, on eve of Juneteenth, Newcastle mayor disparaged reparations and pride. He never disparaged pride. In fact, here's a clip of him doing the exact opposite.
To all of you in the pride movement, you're very welcome in our city, but be very careful of the hate that's in your midst, right? It's not coming from outside, it's coming from within. And that's unfortunate. Reject it. Don't let hate and what you see on social media define and distract you from what you believe in. That goes for anybody.
So somehow the Seattle Times saw that and turned it into the Newcastle mayor disparaged pride? No, he literally said, and he said 2 weeks ago, everyone's welcome. This is a very inclusive and welcoming community. And the most inclusive and welcoming symbol we have is the American flag. He never disparaged pride. Shame on the Seattle Times. Truly, you owe him an apology and you owe him a retraction. Just because he didn't hook, line, and sinker kowtow to the pride people who want the flag hoisted above City Hall, he has a legitimate argument to make. And when he says there, you know, when you are pride and all about love, you have to show it. And they weren't showing it on social media. They weren't showing it in comments and emails to him. He read some of them into the record in front of the people who said those things. He has a legitimate point that he made point by point by point. Now, the Seattle Times, it's not your job to disagree with him, right? Right? It's not your job to disagree with him. You can lift up what he said, but when you run an article saying on eve of Juneteenth, Newcastle mayor disparaged reparations and pride, you're putting your personal beliefs and bias into the equation and pushing it onto him. You owe him an apology. I will also say, I have seen a couple of you in the chat say, Brandy, you got to get him on. Already ahead of you, ask and you shall deliver, coming up on Sundays with Subscribers this week. We will be joined by the mayor of Newcastle, Robert Clark, who is going to join us to talk about all of this, what he went through, and what the Seattle Times wrote about him here. So if you have not become a subscriber already, you can do that by signing up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And Mayor Robert Clark of Newcastle will be our guest this week on Sundays with Subscribers. I am looking forward to it. This guy is just a man after my own heart. Now, he did go on a little bit of a diatribe, right? Like a little soliloquy, but I could tell he's frustrated. Don't sit here and preach to us love and welcoming and inclusion while you're spewing hate and anger like we saw outside Newcastle City Hall. If you're all about love and inclusion, why are you blocking the pastor from walking around on public property who wanted to come and share his opinion on the matter? It's because inclusion to you means people who agree with you. Love to you is loving people who agree with you. And so you're completely undermining your own message. So it's going to be a hell of a Sundays with subscribers this week. All right, we're going to jump into our daily subscriber show poll next, and also our segment, Unbelievable, for the love of God. It's a bad one today. Good one, bad one. First, if you are thinking about selling your home in 2024, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. He's been a real estate agent in this area for a long time. He's not a Johnny come lately. He's been doing this in the ups and downs of the market to great success. He helped our friends Bryce and Carla, who are fans of the Undivided podcast, when they decided to sell their home in Bellevue and move to Florida.
I'm just very detail oriented and never put down our property, because you could hear I-90 from our property and it wasn't the most feng shui yummy piece of property, and our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging, this will be a premium property. He could see that, and he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was.
Yeah, and thanks to the work he did with staging and marketing, they sold their home in 7 days for over list price, even in January with the market the way it was. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It's free, and your home might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, before we get into Unbelievable, just piggybacking off our Monka Dhingra segment, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, do you believe Americans have lowered their standards for who is fit to serve in elected office? I'll tell you, I feel that way. I asked, here are the options I gave you. Yes, across the board, we've lowered our standards. Yes, but only for our own political party. No, standards have always been low. Or no, standards are higher than ever. Not a lot of people choosing that standards are higher than ever, because I think we all realize that that is absolutely not the case. Nicole, what do you think?
Well, I just think it's a problem with the attacks that come with going with running for office, and mm-hmm. no one that would, you know, do a good job, and no one that is, you know, no one wants to go through that.
So it's part of it. So, it's like almost we don't have choices but to pick
right.
people who are below the standards, because that's our options, right?
Those are our options.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
That we've made it miserable for people to run for public office.
Yeah. Matt says, politics is a game of hypocrite entrapment these days. Point out the standards of the other side and how their candidate or themselves are not living up to it while not doing any self-criticism, which is very true. We see that. And again, I'll give you these two examples. You think any Democrat will care that Monka Dhingra has lied for years about being a senior deputy prosecuting attorney?
No.
They're going to use semantics mm-hmm. and say, well, nah.
Why does it matter?
The only Democrat that might care is Nick Brown, the Democrat who's running against her. But if you're lying about that, something so easy with ease, what else are you going to lie about? And now exactly. we're going to have to do a deep dive into her entire history to make sure she's not lying about her education or any of her other things. Because if she's lying about that, again, she might have lied about other things. So that's that. And then you look at the Semi Bird stuff. You think any Republican would be standing up for Bob Ferguson if he had the exact same track record of like bank fraud and stuff? Of course not. So again, it's a lowering of standards, I think, for our own people who match our political ideology form. You think that there'd be Republicans excusing Joe Biden if he had 34 felony convictions? They'd be like, no, believe a court of law. Now, I think there's a lot more factors at play, but we're incapable. We want to use nuance when it comes to Donald Trump, but would we use nuance when it comes to Joe Biden? You know what I mean? David said, the process to get elected attracts the lower standard. This is what Nicole said. It's such an ugly process that those who'd be willing to serve don't attempt it. By default, the standards are significantly lower. I do agree with a lot of that. I should have worked that into the poll somehow.
Thanks to social media, of course. Because right. there were, I mean, I guess this has always been a thing. I mean, yeah. JFK wasn't exactly a stand-up guy in his personal life. But, you know, it didn't come out because that yeah. just you just didn't go after those things. If
right.
you, if they, I mean, I guess that is what stayed the same, is you just don't go after it if they please your party.
Yeah, it's also easier to find bad things about candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Way easier. Like I said, with Monka Dhingra, we can go into internet archives. Like, everything is forever, right? You know, back in the day, if the Semi Bird stuff had come out, how would you have ever found out about some of that stuff? You'd have to go physically mm-hmm. to a location and request documents. And, like, some of this stuff would be impossible to find out. So maybe for political candidates we had previously, they weren't great, but we didn't know. You know?
Well, we didn't know,
you could hide the secrets better.
I also think that's because the media chose not to cover it. They knew
some of it.
JFK was having all these affairs and had all yeah. of this True. Craziness in his personal life with his brothers and all of the craziness. But people didn't care. He was cute and he was, you know, gonna lead us all.
Charming. cute, yes, whatever it is.
Adorable.
Chris on Local says, across the board, running for office has gotten so nasty that the decent people stay away. Bob says, across the board, and we have no one to blame but ourselves. Yeah, mm-hmm. We got to also foster an environment where, like Nicole said, good people want to run for office and aren't unfairly torn down. Now, you should expect immense criticism when you run for office. Telling the truth is a good way to ensure that you're on the right path, and being honest about your background. I say it all the time, pull the M&M card and say everything bad you've ever done and just get it out there at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have this drip drip of all these revelations. In today's day and age, not the media, but the internet sleuths are going to find that stuff. So you just got to be honest and go into it knowing that everything you've ever done that is questionable is going to be brought up.
And some made up stuff.
And
that's
some
the thing.
Made up stuff. Yeah, and then, yeah,
that's made up
stuff
made it
happens.
Unbearable.
You've got to obviously push back against that, but yeah, ridiculous. Okay, in our segment Unbelievable today, some luxury apartments are about to open in Los Angeles, and they will be occupied by the homeless. Let's talk about it. Boop. All right. Look, homeless industrial complex is insane. So remember the story we did on Governor Jay Inslee's right-of-way initiative, where it was like $1 million per person they were spending to clear them from right-of-way encampments and get them out of homelessness, like the camps along the interstate? So when it comes to the homeless industrial complex and government spending, it's just a blank check. There really is no standard. There's no thought behind how much is this worth. And how much would it be worth in like the private sector, right? How much waste or spending would the private sector tolerate? When Governor Inslee's whole right-of-way initiative thing came out and we were questioning, you know, $1 million per person, are you really being a good steward of taxpayer funds? Remember, I went to the legislative preview and I asked some Democratic lawmakers that question earlier this year, and they were like, well, we can't really put a price on human life, and I'm not going to say whether one human is worth $1 million. And it's like, okay, now you're trying to build a straw man. You know what I'm saying? We should be able to help even more human beings with $1 million. So that's a guarantee going to be the argument in Los Angeles, where they have built luxury apartments at the cost of $600,000 per apartment unit that are now going to be used to house the homeless. Here's a clip from ABC 7 LA.
Known as the Weingart Tower, it's intended to help people currently without shelter on Skid Row. This will be LA's largest permanent supportive housing project. There is an entire floor of offices for caseworkers, and the list of amenities is pretty impressive. As you mentioned, there's a gym, an art room, a music room, and a computer room and library. People living here will enjoy 6 common balconies and a cafe. The $165 million project is receiving permanent financing from Proposition HHH, which voters overwhelmingly passed in 2016. The new tower is also receiving state housing funds and $56 million in state tax credits.
Okay. Gym, art room, music room, computer room, library, cafe, $600,000 per unit. $600,000 per unit. Now, I'm not saying that you take that people who are dealing with homelessness should be moved into horrible conditions and meth-addled old hotels and stuff like that. I'm not saying that at all. This is absurd for a variety of reasons. You know, when you look at, oh my God, where do I even start? Look at, Nicole, can you pull up, if you can find it, a couple days ago on the show, remember we had those pictures of that guy who was in the affordable housing unit, the We Heart Seattle thing? You can't, you know, you're going to have caseworkers on site. What do you think is going to happen to these apartment units when you fill them with people who are drug addicted? You're talking about balconies. I mean, we had the picture we showed on the show, that thanks, Nicole, the other day, where it was like a guy in one of these, you know, government sanctioned affordable units. And he was pooping on the floor. I mean, there was filth and trash and he was in there doing drugs. So basically what you've paid for are $600,000 drug dens for people on Skid Row. That's insane. I mean, I'm all for transitional housing, but at $600,000 a pop, and I'm sorry, it stuck out to me in that description, balconies. I wonder how long it's going to take for people to jump off those balconies. And then the payday that, or the amount of money that LA County is going to have to pay up, or to push someone off the balconies. I give it 2 months. before someone is murdered by being pushed off a balcony by someone who's in the throes of drug addiction. This stuff is insane. And meanwhile, Charlie Kirk, I don't agree with him on everything, but he had a really good point on this. And I think how a lot of working class Americans are feeling and why they gravitate towards someone like Donald Trump, who sort of speaks their language, or at the very least acknowledges their frustrations with feeling like everyone is getting handouts around them while they work themselves to the bone just to get by. So Charlie Kirk wrote of this: homeless in Los Angeles County get free apartments valued at $600,000 per unit, around $162 million total, all at the taxpayer expense. Gazans get a $230 million pier that doesn't work and $9 billion in aid, even though we know how much of that will be used to fund terror. Newly arrived illegals get debit cards with cash, free housing in hotels, flights to anywhere, and free legal advice to game our asylum laws. Ukrainians get their pensions paid for and $170 billion in aid and munitions. Everywhere Americans look, deadbeats, foreigners, and criminals are gaming the system, breaking the rules and ripping off taxpayers while those same taxpayers can't afford eggs, gas, or rent. America and its citizens must be put first, or eventually people will just opt out of the entire system. And I think he's spot on. Like, look, I am not the kind of person who says no help for anyone ever, never, and America just needs to be completely insulated from the world. No, I do believe that America has a place on the world stage to try to maintain order in this world of ours. And I also believe that the promise of America is the promise of a hand up, not a handout, but a hand up. And that is who we are as a country. But it is being abused. It's being manipulated. That hand is being overplayed. And now it has turned into handouts for people who think, well, why would I do things by the books when I can do things off the books, when I can do things illegally, when I can engage in antisocial behavior, when I can engage in criminal behavior, and I'm still going to have things given to me. And meanwhile, for the rest of us, we're like, damn, you know, we're working 40, 60, 80 hours a week, and we're just doing the math trying to make, I mean, if you haven't, I'm not there anymore, I'll be honest. I mean, but I have lived paycheck to paycheck. I would say up until my last couple years at Fox 13, I lived paycheck to paycheck. And so I know the feeling very well, and I grew up in poverty. I know the feeling of like $5 in the gas tank so that you can still buy food. I, you know, and having to borrow money from someone to be able to cover your rent. And so I know where a lot of Washingtonians and where a lot of Americans are right now. And I can understand the frustration of looking all around you and seeing people who aren't contributing to this, to society in the way that you are, being given so much. Well, you're not only given so little, but so much is taken from you. It's one of my chief, I'm getting really far afield, but just as a rant, you know, it's one of my chief frustrations with the CCA, the Climate Commitment Act, and Governor Inslee refusing to simply acknowledge what the policy has done to working class people. Like, you care so freaking little. You just spit in people's faces by lying to them about, like, hey, yeah, this is going to increase gas prices significantly. I'm doing it because I think it's good for the climate, and I'll take the criticism that comes with it. No, he costs you money. He stretches your family's budget. He makes it more expensive for you to get to work, to pick up your kids from school, makes it more expensive to buy groceries. And then he has the audacity to turn around and say, no, that's not happening. That's not happening. Like, this isn't doing that. It's just greed from the gas companies. How dare you? I mean, that's why, one of the reasons I'm so disgusted with him and why I fully support the repeal of the CCA. So this is ridiculous. $600,000 a month units. I bet there's a lot of working class families in Los Angeles, two income households with kids who are scraping by but doing everything above board, who would love to live in one of those apartments with a gym, an art room, a music room, a computer room, library, and a cafe. Would love to live in one of those $600,000 apartments in Los Angeles. Shame on the people who believe that this is the American way. Unbelievable. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our segment, Florida Report, where Florida is a good example of what it looks like to give people a hand up and not a handout. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Speaking about family budgets, you know, we have to have insurance. That's just a fact of life. But the insurance industry is wild right now. They're dropping people left and right because they're looking at their profit margins. They're very, very thin. And so you might have gotten a renewal notice where your rates are going way up, even though you're like, I didn't do anything. I didn't even make any claims. But the industry has to make money. So the best thing to do is not to deal with your insurance on your own. You need to have an insurance broker right now to go out to shop the market for you and to make sure you're not getting insurance you don't need, to make sure you're getting the best rates for the insurance you do need. That's why I encourage you to take the First Mark Challenge. Ben and his wife Leslie took the First Mark Challenge. They saved $1,500 a year.
you know, it's good to, just like you would go in for an annual physical with your primary care physician. You know, you may not have anything wrong, but it's good just to kind of have that, you know, annual check-in. And I think that's what FirstMark, you know, the service and the value that they really provide is it helps. It helps you have an understanding of your coverage.
Yeah. So it takes just like an hour or so of your time, and you could save a bunch of money, $1,500 a year. That's awesome. And I've heard from many other people. Casey in Covington says they saved us 37% off our auto quote. And, you know, when you are on a budget, every dollar matters. So FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Oh, and did I mention you never pay them a dime for anything, for your services? So that's awesome. FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. Okay. Dipping outside of Washington State. I think this is a fitting topic to discuss on Florida Report today as we talk about kind of the social safety net. And I think the social safety net has kind of become a social safety hammock for people that they're just comfortable just sleeping in. They're getting real comfortable in that hammock. But sometimes the rules around social safety nets and services and, you know, SNAP and all of this, they almost make it more advantageous to stay on those things, on those government handouts and government assistance, than actually trying to get off them and trying to better your family's financial future and financial outlook. Well, in Florida, they're saying no more. They're still going to help the needy, but they're going to help the needy help themselves.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
I don't know if I could say this. Your dog has been sick. How is Henny doing?
I don't know. He's not eating again, so I have to go back to the vet for another treatment this afternoon, and hopefully he shows some signs of improvement. It's been really sad. He's actually laying by my feet right now,
Henny,
all depressed looking.
Oh, he's such a sweet boy. So, okay, we'll be thinking about Henny because I just love him to bits. I know he's getting to be an old, old man. But yeah. All right. DeSantis is signing a bill that has to do with public assistance and benefits. And this is really interesting because without getting too specific, we actually have a family member who deals with this that has a disability and has a certain amount of benefits and actually has to keep their hours, their work hours at a certain level, because if they make too much money, then they lose all these benefits. And so it's like this weird push and pull. So Ron DeSantis just signed a bill that aims to help low-income families deal with that.
Yeah, so basically this bill doesn't eliminate that benefit cliff that exists, but it kind of eases people down a little bit. So they're going to assign case management to help these families transition from, you know, financial assistance to financial independence. Because in so many cases, people are forced with making the decision, like, should I take this pay increase? If, and if I do, I might lose my housing benefits, my SNAP benefits, like childcare. All these things can also like make it so somebody can't show up to work every day too, like if they can't get affordable childcare. So they're going to help people make that transition a little bit easier so that they can actually make their way into financial freedom and independence, because otherwise a lot of people are just faced with like no choice. They have to keep making less money, working less hours. So this is basically just going to take a step in the right direction, in my opinion, to help families that really do want to achieve that, you know, financial independence from assistance programs a little bit easier.
Yeah, I love this because it's about, okay, you want, you know, the government should want, I don't think all governors or governments do want people to get off public assistance of their own accord, you know, when they're capable of doing it. But when you hit that cliff and you're like, okay, well, I'm making a little bit more money, but now I've lost all these benefits, that's not even worth it for me to pull myself up to financial freedom, as you said. So I think this is great. It's House Bill 1267 being signed into law by Ron DeSantis. And so I love it. Again, that's common sense. Like, let's get people off public assistance and make sure that they don't suffer along the way while trying to do something that's very, very good. All right, you've got a doozy of a story for us today. You've heard of Cocaine Bear. Have you heard of Cocaine Bald Eagles?
No, not yet.
Now you have.
We talked about Cocaine Sharks last year. This would have been a nice buffet for them. A couple boaters found 65 pounds of cocaine off the coast of the Florida Keys on Saturday, which is about like, I think it was like 21 individually wrapped kilos of cocaine, and they each had a nice bald eagle stamped on the front of them.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so when you pitched this story, I thought that you meant there were bald eagles physically floating on the kilos of cocaine. So now that you say it's a stamp, which I'm just learning for the first time, now I'm disappointed.
Oh, I'm very sorry. I'm
I
sure
thought
that...
we had a bunch of coked up bald eagles just flying into the Florida Keys.
I don't even think we have bald eagles down here, to be honest with you. But, you,
the
you
whole
know,
story
close
for
enough.
Me. What a disappointment.
But they were, this was turned in. It's an estimated $1 million street value for this bundle of cocaine. They turned it into the local sheriffs, and I guess Border Patrol will take custody of the drugs and do what they do with illegal drugs, whatever that is.
Well, yeah. I mean, all these kind of stamping it. This is going to America. Bald eagle, send it to America across the open southern border or across the waterways. For the record, we were just in Key West not long ago. I have nothing to do with these bundles of cocaine with American Eagle stamps.
No, me neither. And it's funny because this is actually not a super rare thing. People are finding like a random floating kilo of cocaine pretty often, but this is a lot. This is quite a bit of cocaine to find in one little flotilla.
Yeah, flotilla of coke. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, I hate to hear when anybody's dog's not feeling well. She's had Henny for quite a long time. He's an old boy, graying boy, but apparently he has pancreatitis. So getting treated for that.
Poor baby.
Oh, I know. All right. Let's see. So there was some numbers that came out today that, I mean, I can't say I'm shocked by it because I know our national debt is immense. But when you talk about what the biggest expenses are for the government, so you have, you know, Social Security, right? You have the defense budget. Well, the U.S. federal interest payments. So the interest we pay on our debt has now exceeded the defense budget. Think about that. It's really insane. So our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital joined us to talk about this runaway spending. Elon Musk says the federal government is spending America into oblivion, something you and Elon agree on. And
yeah, it's hard not to. And I unfortunately, I think it's one of those messages that falls on deaf ears a lot because really, if you go look at American politics since the, you know, since the early 80s, primarily on the Republican side of the aisle, there's always been a focus or an undertone or a narrative of, you know, reckless government spending, racking up too much debt. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, you talk about something so for so long, and I think people just kind of start tuning it out. You know, they just get used to it, right? The debt's climbing up every single year, regardless of who we've got in White House, the debt just keeps doubling under every president. And you kind of just start tuning it out, and but there are way markers along the way, like looking at other countries historically. And, you know, when you get to a point where you cross over 100% debt to GDP, meaning all of your debt is greater than the size of your entire economy. And then when you reach a level for us where interest payments become the number one expense for the federal government, those are, for lack of a better term, hallmarks. Those are mile markers that you shouldn't ignore, right? And the reason you shouldn't is we've got multiple examples of this throughout history that when you reach levels like this, there has been no return. And so what governments do in these scenarios is they do what we call inflate the debt away, right? Meaning there's two ways. Think about it. There's two ways to deal with debt. You either pay down the debt or you build up the equity, right? So, you know, for instance, if you owe $500,000 on a $700,000 house, your debt to equity ratio is not very big. Now, we can pay that debt down, or also if we make that $700,000 house worth $1.8 million, the debt doesn't move, right? So it naturally becomes a much smaller percentage of the pie.
That makes sense.
And that's the reason governments pursue inflating debt away as opposed to adopting fiscal responsibility or austerity, as they call it in economics, is because bottom line in democracies, it comes down to reelection, meaning it's easier to explain away inflation and some of the quasi benefits that come with it, like a higher stock market and higher home equity, than it is to try to explain 8 to 10% employment and breadlines.
Yeah, this graph that I was looking at. So it says U.S. federal interest payments now exceed the defense budget. So our regular payments against our interest on our debt now exceed the defense budget. And the estimation that is that within the next few years, interest on the debt will exceed Social Security payments and become the largest item in the budget. It doesn't seem like there's a way to avoid that, to keep that from happening, at least realistically.
No. And if you, like I said, if you don't, let's say the government moderates spending or something, you'll see it fall off in tax revenues or something else. Like, I really don't think that you're going to see that issue. You know, I don't think you're really going to see it change much. Unless, like, for instance, okay, people are like, well, you know, as soon as the Fed can lower interest rates, we can lower interest rates and that'll, you know, that will lower the interest expense for the year. Yeah, it will. But if you have an environment that justifies substantial interest rate cuts, you're also going to be looking at lower tax receipts.
Yeah.
Right. So this is kind of the problem that you're in, is you've got different levers you can pull, but they're probably just going to end up exactly in the same spot.
Yeah, America's dug itself into a big fat hole. Ridiculous. And honestly, Republicans have let go of their fiscal responsibility a little bit, too. So they're like, well, if Democrats are going to do it, I don't know. Anyway, Zach Abraham and his team at Boer Capital, they're having one of their free Know Your Risk webinars coming up on the 27th, June 27th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. This one is going to specifically focus on inflation, which they call the silent portfolio killer. You've done all this hard work. Saving for retirement. You've got a vision in mind of what that retirement is going to look like. Make sure inflation doesn't screw it up. So this is a good chance just to hear from the experts, get some advice. It's totally free, you know, no obligation or anything like that. So knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Sign up for the webinar on June 27th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244, go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right, some questions and comments before our closing sanity check, which is going to take us to San Francisco today. Matt Gilbert on Monka Dingra with a $5 super chat. Monka calling herself a King County prosecutor reinforces the false stereotype that King County prosecutes. Yeah, that's true. They should call the prosecutor's office something else, although, you know, I'm sure they prosecute some cases, maybe not as many as we'd like. Greg Olakis, the Seattle Times isn't a news outlet. They are a narrative pusher. Good for the mayor for doing the right thing. Referring to the Seattle Times suggesting that the mayor of Newcastle is some sort of racist homophobe, which is ridiculous. Matthew Cook, that's not journalism. The Seattle Times is engaging in activism. When you know local media won't hold you accountable, you are emboldened to lie. Yeah, the media doesn't do a good enough job holding the media accountable. They don't police each other, so who's supposed to police the media? Besides us, you know? We can't be the only ones policing the media. On the LA apartments for the homeless, Jill C. says, my mom, who is 91 years old, is paying $4,100 a month to live in a place with all those nice amenities. She should be the one to get a break. She's been an honest taxpayer her whole life. That's the problem. That is the problem in a nutshell in one comment. Why is Jill's mom, who has worked her whole life, contributed to the system, now having to pay $4,100 a month to live in a senior care home or facility? I'm not sure exactly where she's living, but I know that those are very expensive. And then you've got homeless people who are going to be taken off Skid Row with fentanyl addictions and put in a nice high-rise apartment unit with all the amenities that Jill's mom is now paying out of pocket for. It's ridiculous. Aletta Woodworth says, unless alcohol and drugs are forbidden and monitoring is maintained, history shows that it does not work, and training and counseling must be part of the bargain so they can eventually get jobs to support themselves. There has to be a limit for how long the taxpayers are required to support this, as most are having trouble barely maintaining their own lives. And you make a good point. I will acknowledge I'm not sure if there's a requirement for treatment and counseling as part of living there. I'm a big believer in that. Like, if you're going to have someone in transitional housing, it has to be conditional. They have to be actively involved in treatment for whatever is ailing them, be it mental health or substance abuse. Y says, it sure feels stupid to be living an honest life, abiding by the law, working hard only to be lied to, suck dry of our hard-earned money to reward criminals and lawlessness. Amen, sister. If I didn't have morals in my faith, I would probably be tempted to work the system. It does suck. I'll acknowledge when I got that speeding ticket a few months ago, which I totally deserved, there was a part of me like, really? All the crimes out there that people are just driving off from traffic stops, I should be given a medal for stopping. I should be given an award for stopping my vehicle and not making you have a chase that you're going to have to terminate. So there is a little frustration. I hear this from people all the time with car tabs who refuse to renew their car tabs because they're like, we voted for it. We didn't get it. I'm not renewing my car tabs. And they've had expired car tabs for years. I don't know if they've gotten tickets, but I get it. You feel like everyone's out to get you. HOV lanes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, sometimes I'm tempted.
It's pretty tempting.
It is pretty tempting.
I might have gotten in trouble for that. But
no, you didn't.
Oh, I got out of the trouble, but yes.
You got out of the trouble because you're so good looking. Just kidding. It's because you had a big black eye.
Big black eye gave me away.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's just really frustrating stuff. So I get it. And I know I went on a whole long rant about it, but this lack of care and concern for the, you know, both parties say we're a party of the working class, and Democrats push that narrative more than anyone. They say Republicans are like, oh, a party of the rich and tax cuts for the rich and all this stuff. Democrats are screwing the working class. I don't understand why working class people don't see that. You know, it's like they're taxing the hell out of you.
They don't look.
They don't look, and the media's not telling them. It's wild, wild stuff.
They just listen. They don't look. It's just like the Seattle Times piece on the Newcastle mayor. I think people just looked at that headline and went with it.
Yep.
And the people I heard discussing it had obviously not listened to the cut, or especially not the whole 15 minutes that he spoke, because they went based on that title and just assumed. I mean, I literally heard somebody say that it was, or that heaven forbid, the Seahawks live in Newcastle.
Like, why
why does that matter? What the mayor said.
Are you saying all Seahawks players are black? And also, do they need reparations? I don't think so.
Right.
I think they're doing just fine.
Yeah.
It's just dumb.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's lowbrow, like surface level. This whole Seattle Times article.
You're
not listening.
You're not watching. You're not looking. You're just reading a headline.
Confirmation bias. It's insane.
Absolutely.
Okay. Are we going to end the show on time? Holy smokes with that. I know. We have a really good closing sanity. Well, it's not good. It's horrifying. Let's get to it. All right. So what, you know, Seattle's bad. Portland's bad. San Francisco's worse. We know that. San Francisco has a horrible drug crisis going on. People dying at record levels. Their homelessness is absolutely out of control. So you would think at the mayoral debate this week in San Francisco that there would be a laser focus on the really, really critical issues. And actually, there was an opportunity for the mayoral candidates, including Mayor London Breed, who's running for re-election. This is an awesome opportunity. I wish they did this at every debate. You get to ask your opponent a question. That's an opportunity to ask them a really, really difficult question to prove that they can handle difficult issues. Well, London Breed picked for her opponent the most difficult question she could think of, challenging him to name three drag queens.
I'd like to ask Mark a question. You were at the Harvey Milk LGBT Democratic Club and couldn't name any LGBT advisors to your campaign. You were at the debate last week and couldn't name any drag queens on your own. I was wondering if you could, this is an opportunity to redeem yourself, and if you could name three LGBTQ advisors for your campaign and three drag queens in San Francisco.
So we're not going to revise the drag queen question from last week, but what I will say is I'm incredibly proud of the support that I have from our LGBTQ plus community here in the San Francisco.
San Francisco deserves to fall into the sea. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been not only today's episode of Undivided, but this week's episode of Undivided, episodes of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We've got a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up for the subscribers among you. We're going to have the mayor of Newcastle, who, according to the Seattle Times, is just a racist, homophobic bigot. Something tells me that when you hear from him, you're not going to come away from the interview with the same impression. So we'll see subscribers on Sunday. We'll see the rest of you on the live show at noon on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend.